Live from EverBank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and John Osher.
As John Osher walks in the door right now, we'll start the show the right way by sending out that big congratulations to Telvin Smith, named AFC Defensive Player of the Week after his effort there in London. Already the second time in 23 career games for Telvin Smith to be named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week, and certainly deserving of that honor as we welcome in John Osher. What's going on, Johnny?
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen who would have beaten him for that, because it was quite a, and I guess as I say that, if I would have had to pick a defensive MVP, I might have gone with Colvin.
Me too.
So, you know, as well as Telvin played, the sack by Colvin certainly got them, it was 7-3, but that certainly started that momentum in the second quarter. And, you know, as big a play as they've had in a while was him breaking the pass at the end of the game. So, I get that you picked Telvin. It made perfect sense. There's no argument. But not insignificant that you have two players who could have gotten that. And I heard you talking about Telvin and about Aaron Colvin. As I'm writing later on this morning on Jaguars.com, you've now gotten to the point where you've got five or six guys out of that draft class that appear after seven games to have a chance to develop into good players by any standard.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Bortles, you've got Linder, you've got Allen Robinson, if you count Allen Hurns as part of the draft class. You know, I don't know where else you put him. He was a free agent, but he's in there.
Class of 15, 14.
Yeah. All of a sudden, that's, you know, that's a draft class that measures up with probably any of this franchise has had in terms of every player. They had nine guys. I think six have, look like they're contributing in a big-time way. It doesn't include Marquise Lee, who except for injuries, quote-unquote, looks really good. So, pretty good draft class.
No, it is. And, you know, it's funny. You talk about the Colvin thing from Sunday, too.
And you know what? If Bortles is good, none of the other guys would have to be good for it to be a good draft class.
No. And, you know, when all you guys are over there in London, so Dempsey and I were actually doing the post game here stateside on Sunday, and usually we have the three-man team in here. We have JP with Mike and
so two and a half.
Fred Taylor.
Okay.
Right? for the post game, I don't know which one of them's the half.
Oh, yes, you did.
But, you know, we usually give Fred Taylor the vote and a half, and everyone else gets one vote for the MVP of the game. Well, since it was just Mike and I, we did it a little bit different. He just laid out four names and said, pick whoever the MVP is going to be. And I actually picked Colvin, too. And I thought that, look, Telvin had a whale of a game. And he's certainly well-deserving of the AFC Defensive Player of the Week honors. I think the plays that Colvin made for the Jags within that game, too, though, like you said, it's...
game-starting and game-ending,
right,
so to speak.
Right, he started the Avalanche there for the Buffalo Bills. And then he ended the game with, and it was fun talking to Lagerman yesterday, because he talked specifically about that final fourth down play. And House, who's a guy who obviously got pointed out by the coaches last week, they put Grotz in instead of him. And he said House on that play made the play as much as Colvin did by jamming that route and forcing basically the two receivers to run into each other instead of allowing that receiver to get a clean step off the line of scrimmage and be able to get to Aaron Colvin and possibly knock him off
And Colvin baited him a little bit. So it was a nice, it's the kind of play that, you know, winning teams make. It's the kind of play they need to start making. Back to Telvin Smith. I thought as impressive a play as he had, and you know, my head's in the computer a lot, so I don't. It was a play to the left from where I was sitting, or you know, wide to the left, and he came in and tackled the running back for about a 4-yard loss,
mm-hmm.
And not always what you expect out of Telvin. You know, he's exceptional in the passing game, exceptional chasing guys down. Don't always think of him as a guy who comes up and just makes the impact hit. But, you know, during that run in the second quarter we're talking about, he made that play as well. Could have made the game-ending play had he caught the interception he had in the end zone. So, no argument with Telvin being the guy. I just didn't want to let Colvin sort of go unnoticed today.
No, and I think they draft Dante Fowler Jr. because they recognized the need they were going to have. And I know, you know, we talk a lot about some of the issues this team has had through the first half of the season basically now. And when you talk to fans who a lot of them still think the team should have drafted Amari Cooper. I think you're watching the development of young receivers, and you can see the reasoning why the team decided not to go that direction.
You could find a place for Amari Cooper, no doubt.
No doubt.
They're going to think that, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but they're going to think that until Dante Fowler is what they expect Dante Fowler to be, then fans are going to say that about Amari Cooper.
No doubt. But you can see the reasoning, because the Jaguars saw what their pass rush was without Dante Fowler Jr., which is what you're looking at, fans. I mean, that's why they decided to go that direction, said we need to do something about our pass rush, because they could see what this roster was without a guy like Dante Fowler Jr. on it. They couldn't do anything about it in free agency because there's just nothing there.
Right.
And Dominican Sue was going to get paid that just massive amount of money by Miami.
Right.
So they weren't going to be in on that. They bring in Odric, who's not a pass rusher. He's a run stopper. And you see difference makers developing at the other levels of this defense with Colvin and Telvin developing. Now you have to find one or two guys that in your front four can just win. And Cedric Marks has been one of those guys. I don't know how much you can expect him to be that in 2015 coming off the ACL injury, but I think you can expect you to have Cedric again in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And what the combination of that looks like with what you thought you were getting out of Dante Fowler jumps that defense up a lot in my mind.
This scheme needs it. It'll be great if they get Dante Fowler in there and he's what they expect him to be. At the same time, this scheme needs at least one more guy who can get to the quarterback up front, even beyond Cedric, even beyond Dante. If they believe, as they clearly do, that for this scheme to work, you have to be able to get pressure with four, then it's not enough just to have two guys who you think can rush the passer. So if there's a pass rusher of any sort available in free agency, he might be getting a call.
Could be. And wherever they wind up with that first round pick.
And it might be a pretty good offer.
Right. And wherever they wind up with that first round pick, that could be the direction they go to.
Yeah.
Although it's something that Caldwell kind of talked about not being available in this draft. But I'm not going to talk draft. I can tell you I'd be very intrigued by the idea of Robert Kendiche on this defensive line and adding him with Dante Fowler Jr. But that's a conversation for from now. Hopefully.
We got some time on that topic.
Hopefully we don't have to get to that for a while. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today. John Osher joining me. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day brought to you by Tom Busch Motors. Quite simply, with Ryan Mallett now being dismissed by Houston, so there's some chaos, it seems like, in the division. Indianapolis is dealing with all they're dealing with, and Tennessee seems to be in the same rebuilding phase that you were last year, Jacksonville. So, who wins the AFC South, and with what record do you think they win it as the Jaguars go into their bye week 2-5? You can respond on Twitter, at 1010XLFatTony, at John Osher, as well as at 1010XLTyler, and we'll get to some of your responses a little bit later on, but simply, who do you think wins the AFC South this year, and how many wins does it take to get there for the champion of this division this year? John Osher joining me in studio. We'll get some more thoughts on what's going on with this Jaguars team as they go into their bye, having won their second game of the year against Buffalo in London. As we continue along on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
He is John Osher. I'm Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey out today. He took a couple days off here during the bye week. He'll be back in here with me tomorrow, and I think Ryan O'Halloran joining us as well from the Times Union. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today. For all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant grease trap service, and much more. Same-day service Saturday and Sunday included. The right people, the right equipment. Serving Jacksonville since 1978. Just go to MetroRooter.com or give them a call. 904-695-1911. And, yeah, congratulations again to Telvin Smith getting the honors as AFC Defensive Player of the Week. I think if there's going to be any serious Pro Bowl consideration for him, I think he deserves it with or without those plays. But that's what gets you into people's consciousness is when they're watching that kind of play. I was actually disappointed on Sunday. You know, I got home in time to actually watch some football, which is novel for me on a Sunday,
right, sure.
Covering the Jags. But I got home basically to watch the second half of the 1 o'clock games and all through the both 4 o'clock
right.
games. They kind of jobbed me there with only two games at 4 o'clock this week. What are they doing, NFL? It's like they knew it would be the week I'd
That's
be
right.
home and able to watch anything. But they do on the Red Zone, the every touchdown from every game
right.
at the end of the broadcast. They didn't have the London game in there. I don't know if it's like the rights. They didn't have the rights to that specifically. But when they went through every touchdown from every game, it started with the 1 o'clock kicks and not the Jags. And I was a little disappointed because I wanted everyone who was watching the Red Zone at that
right.
moment to watch Telvin score again.
Maybe their generator broke.
I don't know. Maybe it did. Maybe it did. I was on the air last night when
that was unbelievable
for Fox.
That was,
I couldn't
that was
hear
something.
It. I heard it was interesting.
Yeah, it's you don't see it very often in this day and age. When I was a kid, you used to see technical difficulties on your TV all the time. Now you don't see it very often.
No, you don't. As Kansas City with the longest game in World Series history gets the win in extra innings last night over the New York Mets to start that one off. 641-1010 is the phone number. If you want to get in with John and I today, you can. Also, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line is 641-1010. Are you recovered from London yet? I know Jeff was still struggling a little bit yesterday.
Well, yeah, I'm recovered, but I bring it a little more than Jeff. So that's it is a tough anybody who's gone over there, and we were talking while we were over there, that it's easy in March or April to look back and sort of forget what a taxing trip it is. And I was getting on the elevator, I think it was either Friday or Saturday, I got on with Sergio Brown. And just, when you're on the elevator, you just kind of, hey, what's up? He goes, oh, man, I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, can you imagine doing this 6, 7, 8 times a year? And he just laughed. He goes, no way. And that really, when you're in the trip, is when you sort of remember, man, this is a difficult thing to do. It's difficult to get the sleep right. It's difficult to recover. Now, I mean, if you're listening, I'm not whining about going to London. It's great. But in terms of your body, in terms of the concept of trying to get ready for an NFL game off of that,
mm-hmm.
And doing it over and over and over again, very difficult to imagine.
Yeah, and really, if they're ever going to do it, I imagine the solution would have to be a month here, a month there, a month here, a month there, a month stateside, and then a month
yeah.
over there.
I guess you could get the travel worked out with that, but there's
so
many.
A lot.
And the biggest, I think the absolute biggest thing is I don't believe that you would get players wanting to play there and spend their careers there long term. The distance from family, the concept of that, the families wanting to live in London. London's great. I mean, I love London. But to try to convince players,
mm-hmm.
young people to move their families over there away from their current families, I think that would be a very, very tough issue for a franchise over there to ever overcome.
And I think the NFL they can accomplish what they want
Absolutely.
To accomplish growing the game without putting a team in London.
And that's the feel. That's the it was interesting. Shad Khan in August when he spoke to the media, I think it was August, maybe in early September, when he was here, and he usually speaks to the media a couple times a year, and that's one of his points where he talks about issues with everybody. He was very specific that day when he talked about, you know, the formula is probably going to be 5 or 6 games in London league wide. And since then, it's clear that's being discussed within the league. And since then, you haven't heard a whole lot of people or people with sources inside the league talking about owners and teams at the league, at the team level,
mm-hmm.
thinking that that's going to happen. I'm sure the league still wants that as sort of a long-term, let's figure out someday to make this work. But I think it's going to be a tough ask. I think it's a long way away if it's ever going to happen.
You get the opportunity daily to interact with fans that are emailing you for the Ozone, those kinds of things.
And it's awesome, Tony.
As far as fans from outside of Jacksonville, right, where uh-huh. their opportunity to watch the game instead of having to watch it on Sunday Ticket or go out to a local bar or anything like that
right.
was they could stream it through Yahoo. Have you heard from fans who did that?
Yeah, and I've heard from not a lot. I've heard from you know maybe 25 or 30 fans about that. Probably half and half. I think the fans that their technology was working fine. It seemed, and I'm putting words in people's mouths, I'm assuming that the fans who had streaming devices,
mm-hmm.
And I didn't do it, but I'm assuming like if you had a Roku or if you had some sort of device that was really made for streaming onto TV, that it probably went okay for the most part. Probably wasn't a whole lot different. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was actually trying to stream the game on my Xbox One, and it was working pretty well, but the Roku app, the stream wasn't very good.
Is that right? Well, and again, I didn't do it. I have Roku. I sort of assumed that would work well. But, you know, when that gets fleshed out, as time goes on and all those devices become more of the norm for people and they get that worked out, I can't imagine it's not going to be a good thing. There were a lot of people who had, it seemed like there was some trouble with the streaming, and it's hard to ever know from emails what causes that. Was that the person's device? Was that the, you know, that's a technology issue.
Yeah.
But it's a learning curve. I mean,
been their internet provider.
Right.
I don't know.
It's also a new thing, and new things are often met with, what is this, you know, with resistance. But there's no question that's the future, and there's no question they have to figure out how to make that work best for them. And, you know, smartphone technology, all that stuff, I'm not Bill Nye technology guy, but it's clear that's going to move in that direction. And I think as it goes on, it's going to be something people are more comfortable with. And I've cut the cord, Tony, so I'm, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's
kind of a forward-thinking guy, though, Tony.
I think that's what the NFL is trying to anticipate how to deal with is –
well, they have to, because if they don't,
a lot of people are not,
they're left behind.
Yeah, they're not doing cable, they're not doing satellite, so they're probably watching their subscription numbers on the Sunday Ticket drop right now, and they're trying to figure out ways, what do people want to consume? And do they want to consume everything on a Sunday, right? Or do they just want Red Zone?
Right.
Do they just want to be able to watch their team that week? And if they have to pay, you know, $4 or $5 that week to watch their team, are people going to be willing to do that?
Right.
And I think the NFL is trying to figure out exactly what that's going to look like. I know for me, I'm kind of on the opposite side of this from what they're dealing with over there in Europe, right? Where we're trying to take our game and bring it to them, the NFL to them.
Right.
And, you know, they're trying to bring their game, soccer, to the States and find some kind of platform where it works here. Now, they're on NBC Sports Network and NBC on Saturday mornings. Premier League
right.
plays here. I can tell you that I'm not going to go to my streaming device to watch soccer. Like, if that's where I would have to go to watch it, that's not where I'm going to go to watch
gotcha.
It. And it's not because I don't like
soccer.
Do you
have a streaming device on your TV, or is it?
Yeah,
okay.
I do. But I also have cable. So if I didn't have cable, my answer may be different than it is.
Right.
You know, but I do have cable. So it's either on TV or it's not for me at this point. And I do wonder how much of that the NFL is going to run into too in Europe, where it's
sure.
Yeah, I like the NFL, but I'm not going to go there if that's where they're going to make me go to get this product.
Well, as time goes on, the streaming is going to become more and more the norm.
Yeah,
and then once it does, it's clear the NFL wants to be ready with the car turned on and the engine running when that happens.
Yeah, no doubt about it. While we have a few more minutes here with you, John, talking about this Jags team and the London game and what that potentially means for this team going forward. I know maybe it's a moment where this team turns a little bit. I've talked to you about this before. I talked to you about it last night. I don't know what this team looks like, and they're so young. I don't know what they look like playing with any kind of confidence.
Right.
Because they haven't had an opportunity to build any of that. And I'm curious to see what it would look like if they ever did, because mm-hmm. I think they are young enough that the noise would stop if they ever started having yeah. some success for themselves.
Well, and it's so frustrating because you try to analyze this thing week to week, and it's very tough in the NFL to analyze it week to week because it's so up and down, and so many games are like, you know the ones they've played so far, where you know they've had seven games, and six of them have come down to plays being made or not being made in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't seen that a lot in the last two or three years because the Jaguars haven't been good enough to get close in the fourth quarter. So that's unusual and that's not good. And it appears they've grown out of that stage. And now they're at the point where the games are being decided in the fourth quarter. So the mistakes, the little things show up more. Does that mean they're better? Does that mean they are at a point where they were at a two in terms of quality of franchise? Now they've reached a three or a four. Are they on their way to a six where you start putting away those games and you start being up by 10 late and you're past the point where fluky stuff or one mistake beats you? Or are they just not a team capable of winning in that situation? It seems like they're learning and they're getting and they're starting to be a team that can win, but it's hard to know until it happens. You know,
right?
As I said last night when we were talking with David Lamb, I can't rightly predict a four game winning streak for a team that hasn't put together back to back wins since what, 2013, I think.
Yeah,
I don't think they won back to back last year.
They haven't won more than four games in 4 years.
Right. So I can't predict winning streak. I can tell you that it appears that the guys that they want to be good players for them in the future, a lot of those guys through 7 weeks seem to be guys that you can count on more often than not. And the guys we've already talked about, Colvin, Bortles, Hearns, Robinson, Smith, Linder's not on the field, but there's a lot of guys there who after 7 games, I think most people would go, yeah, I feel pretty good about that guy. Well, they're still really young. And they're starting to look like they're going to be consistent. When they get consistent, it'll be very interesting to see what these guys do. Now, does consistency happen right after the bye? Is that going to take more time? You would think that a game like London would give them confidence to keep improving.
Sure.
And to keep the ship together, whatever all that means. But I'm also not going to be dim and say that there's not some realities that go along with 2-5. That I think they're going to be playing over these last 9 games, a lot of close games that are decided just like the ones so far. How the season turns out will be how they play down the stretch.
Yeah, look, I think it's a team that has to have more confidence than they had 2 weeks ago finding a way to win that game in London. Doesn't
sure.
mean I'm going to pick them to beat the New York Jets, who I think is a really tough road test mm-hmm. for this team.
But not a team that necessarily has anything that happened in the NFL. But they're not necessarily a team that has a bunch of firepower and, like New England's going to get away from you.
No, they shouldn't.
So
they should.
Obviously can, but so, and so far this season, Jags are a team that can score.
No, they are. And I think if they find a way to beat the Jets, then you're going to see a team that's going to be playing with confidence
sure.
going to Baltimore. And that's what I'm curious to see. I can't predict that that's what we're going to see yet.
It would be right.
But I'd really love to see what it looks like with this team and this young talent if they can find just any way to beat New York
yeah.
and see what it looks like over the second half of the season for them.
I think it's a big game on a couple of fronts. And as you talked, I started thinking about it. Really, since Carolina, they haven't played a team that on paper was good but beatable. Meaning, it was a tough ask for them to go to New England and think you were going to win that game. So that really, I don't think most fans would have gone into that game thinking, yeah, we can play with these guys and we can beat them. That's the elite team right now.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina was a good team and you played in the fourth quarter, I didn't come out of the Carolina game thinking that they weren't as good as Carolina
okay.
at the time. Since then, it's been Miami, it's been Houston, it's been Tampa, it's been the Colts without Luck. So most people have said, yeah, there's something wrong with this team that the Jaguars should be able to play with them. Do you follow me? Mm-hmm. Miami wasn't playing very well, the 3-game losing streak, and then the Buffalo game. People had a good feeling going into that. Jets are pretty good. And so this is but not great, not New England great. So this is going to be a chance for the Jaguars to show, can they play and be in it in the fourth quarter against a pretty good team?
Yeah. Can they beat a team that we all thought Miami was? Right?
When they
beat that Miami
right.
team, everyone thought, okay, here's a playoff contender
right.
that they just beat in their own house. They haven't done this in a while.
And Carolina, looking back, Carolina hadn't lost.
Sure.
So to be with that team, two missed kicks killed them that day in the pick six. You know, a couple of plays, and they were toe-to-toe with that team the whole game. I just remember walking out of that game that day, I didn't feel like Carolina was head and shoulders better than the Jaguars that day. I thought the Jaguars had some drop passes and some mistakes that gave the game away. That's a 6-0 team. So can they do it again against that level team? The Jets and Carolina feel sort of similar to me.
Mm-hmm.
So can they play toe-to-toe with that? I think that's what people will be interested in seeing on Sunday or a week from Sunday.
He's John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Mike Dempsey will rejoin us tomorrow. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today, and I want to get into a question that I think a lot of fans are asking coming out of specifically the last month or so of this season regarding the fourth quarter of games for this Jacksonville Jaguars team and just where and how do you parcel out the blame for the shortcomings that the Jags have had to this point in the 2015 season. We'll get into that as we roll along. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
Manuel, 4 of 10 so far on the day for 50 yards. He and the Bills will start from their own 20-yard line, 14-3 Jacksonville, 12-21 to play in the half. EJ looks, fires it to the right side. That's picked off! Tilvin Smith has picked it off! Tilvin running it back! That's a touchdown for the Jaguars on back-to-back defensive plays!
And Tilvin Smith joins us in studio now. Fat Tony, John Osier here with you on Jaguars Today. And
what the listeners need to know is that was Telvin's ringtone we just heard.
Right, right. Does it ever get old hearing your name on an NFL highlight, Telvin?
I don't think so, because that's something that's going to be remembered and always replayed. So hopefully that'll go down as one of the big-time Jaguars plays.
No doubt, man. Two-time now AFC Defensive Player of the Week in just 23 career games, man. I mean, how does it feel to get that kind of honor?
It feels good. You know, just hard work paying off. I tweeted out hard work, dedication, hard work, dedication, hard work, dedication. Stick with it. It'll pay off. And I really believe that. Just stick with it, and everything going to come tenfold.
What can you walk us through the play a little bit, the pick six itself?
It's all kind of a blur. It was just, nah. I seen a snap of the play. Shady went to the flats. As a hook dropper, that tells me I got to get a little more width than I normally would. And then the receiver outside, I think it was Woods, he ran like a little curl route, got right in between it. Got a little width, got in between it, caught the ball, took off.
Obviously, you're a fast guy, and you've always been fast. But we've all watched a lot of fast defensive players who don't make big plays. Have you always, is there a knack to it? Is it just a matter of when the ball is there, you got to make the play at that moment? Or what is it? Because you've made an inordinate number of big plays for a guy who's played 23 games in this league.
I think it's just instincts. A lot of people, you know, that have a lot of talent and a lot of things, and they're smart football players, but lack the instincts. And at times, you know, it's not something that you've been coached to do, or it's not something that, you know, you watched in the film room. It's just, boom, you got to make a decision right now. And I think that's what separates me from a lot of players.
Now, before we came on, you were saying it might have been a two-touchdown day for you.
It could have been. If I'd have caught the second one, had I not have jumped and just threw my hands up, I probably could have took it 101. So that's one I left out there. That's always a big one you want to get back.
Now, put you on the spot here. Had the vote been yours, do you vote for Colvin or do you vote for you? Or is it Co?
Right.
I'll let you off the hook.
to be honest, I feel like, you know, people recognize the AC, but they truly not giving him the credit right now. I feel like people should be saying his name just like they saying mine, because, you know, a couple games people didn't even throw his way. Then in the games when people do, either he deflected or he right on them, or, you know, he batting the ball down. So, you know, I have to go for AC, man. That's one guy I'm really rooting for. He gonna be, you know, top five corners in the league by the time the season over, I feel like.
Telvin Smith joining us in studio. He's been named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week this week after the pick six and nine tackles over there in London, getting the Jags that first win overseas against the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. And Telvin, I know the first time we had you in after you got drafted by the Jags, we asked you, you know, what kind of play do you most want to make in a game? We said sack, fumble, interception, anything that you could do in a game, and you said pick six. Pick six is the top of the mountain, brother. Still there?
It definitely is. You know, that's the game changer. I don't care if I had three tackles and a big six, for a defensive player, not even a defensive player, just a linebacker, to get in there on a play like that, that's big. That's game changing. That's momentum. We going back out there on the field and making something else happen. So pick sixes are that thing.
Yeah, it's fun to go right back out on the field.
Right? I'm happy it was only 26 yards. I told Coach, they said, get ready to go. I said, okay, that's good, that's good.
Standing in the locker room on Sunday after the game, and I'm not even sure you heard this. I was talking to Dan Scuda, and he was talking about you and the play, and then he kind of said, he can play a lot better than he did today. Mm-hmm. And he was kidding about it. It seems like there's a good relationship between you and Paz and Scuda. What are you learning from those guys? What's the relationship like, you know, in that room when you're practicing?
To start off, I could have played a lot better. It was 10 opportunities as we looked at film. I made 9 plays and had to pick 6, but it was 10 big plays in the game that I could have made. Well, not probably big plays, a couple tackles, the interception, and the pick that Puzz had. He saved me on that one. And that's just the relationship of us. We as we look at games and look at film, a lot of times, I Puzz a fit and then I'll come right off of him, or I'll fit somewhere and Puzz will come right off me. Or like the interception that he got, I went and jumped the shallow route and he jumped in my window and got an interception. So I think it's that chemistry of us, you know, just in the film room, we're talking. On the practice field, we're always talking. And then when we get in, we just feel each other and we're meshing and we're moving. But what I'm learning from those guys is just poise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Scooter, he's going against the big guys, moving them, hitting moves on them. I want to get pass rushing better. So I look at him to that. And then Puzz, we call him Superman around here. He just got everything. I'm just learning and watching. And so when it's my time to, you know, take over and really lead, I know exactly. It's no step. It's a keep going.
And it's got
to
be an unbelievable, I guess, opportunity. This is a young team overall, but here's a 9-year guy next to you who's seen everything. I guess when you look over on game day and he kind of points or says, hey, over here, you can trust that he's right. That's got to help you too.
Exactly. A lot of times, it's like you just said, when we out on the field and we talking, and sometimes I might notice something and then tell him and he might tell me, and then we like, okay, that put us on the same page right there. And if you look at the film, a lot of times you'll see us we on the same way or we moving the same way. That's just because, you know, we're talking and that respect that we have a mutual respect for one another and what we, you know, got going on out there. It's crazy. But I say we're the best duo in the league. If you look at the stats, you know, he missed a game, so that took away from it. But if you look at the stats, we got to be leading picks in the league. I know he got, what, 3?
Yeah,
2?
That's right.
He has 2. I have 1. You know,
come
not
on. A lot of
tackles
that,
between
man.
You guys,
exactly,
too. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you and, know, tandem in the league.
Emotional roller coaster of a game, too, with the 24-point lead that the defense got you guys. And then you watch it just fade away, fade away, fade away. And then Blake throws the interception. What was the mood like on the sideline when Buffalo took that first lead there in the first fourth quarter?
I'm not even going to lie. It was like, a shocker, gut punch. But it's the way that everybody took that punch. It wasn't like we took it and rolled over on the ground and started looking at Coach like, Coach, what are we going to do? It's we got hit in the stomach and looked at each other, and we said, we're going to win this game. And that's the first time I truly feel like since I've been at this organization that we looked to each other and we said, we're going to win this game. A lot of times, and the one I always will remember is when we started out in Philly 17-0, and they came in and we didn't, you know, put another point on the board and we didn't do too much. You know, that's one of those times we should have, but this one we did, and man, I just feel like, you know, that just shows the growth of the team.
I was talking to Roy Miller yesterday about the same thing you're talking about. After the Blake pick six, some of the mistakes that Blake has made this year, and he said, you know, even when he makes a mistake, we believe that he's going to come back from it.
Mm-hmm.
We believe, and because there's something about his demeanor that you need in a quarterback, obviously. I assume you guys feel the same way. The entire defense they trust that he's going to come back from a moment like that.
Definitely. And that's a quarterback that you got to live and die with. And that's the way we look at it. Like, you know, he's going to try and take those chances. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, that's going to be that hurrah play. And everybody, the whole stands, everybody going to go crazy. And then sometimes it's going to be that play where you say, ah, man. Mm-hmm. But you say, like I said, we're going to live and we're going to die with him. And at the end of the day, you know, we got his back and we're going to go out and play. It's on us to stop him. We're a defense. So he make a mistake, we got to come back. And a lot of times we bail us out of mistakes. So, you know, it's vice versa.
AFC Defensive Player of the Week has a nice ring to it. That's Telvin Smith, Jacksonville Jaguars linebacker. Pro Bowl linebacker has an even better ring to it.
It definitely does. It keep working. It's going to come.
All right, man. We'll start the campaign for you. Kind enough to join us today. Congratulations again, man.
Definitely. Appreciate y'all having me.
Telvin, fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Enjoy the bye week, and we'll see you boys on the field again here in a couple weeks when you go beat the Jets, brother. Absolutely. Telvin Smith walking out the door. Thanks to Tad Dickman for getting him in here with us for a couple minutes, and a cool honor for him and one of my favorite people in this locker room to talk to week to week.
Yeah, and yeah, there's some guys, when they're very young, you can sort of tell that they get it, they're confident. There's certainly a magnetism to them. If he continues, there's no reason to think he won't. With the plays, he's going to be an absolute star.
No doubt.
And beyond that stuff, which is all great, really, really going to help this defense and be a very interesting player in the sense that not every defensive player who's good can change games and can make big plays. There's a difference. And he is certainly has a remarkable knack for the game-changing play that he's shown in 23 games on a team that, frankly, is not really built yet to completely take advantage of a player like him.
Sure.
Meaning, on a defense that where a lot of other people were playing at a terrifically high level, be even better because you can take advantage of that speed. You can take advantage of the ability to take risks. Take advantage of like he said, that playmaking instinct that he has. It's hard to picture the arrow not being way, way up on him.
No, no doubt about it. And you love the fact that he's like, man, Colvin, I feel like his name should be mentioned as much as mine. And I wonder if I was AC, I'd give him a bit of a hard time. Like, as soon as I saw him in the locker room today, I'd be jabbing a little bit there.
Well, I thought it was really interesting what he said about Paz and Scooter.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCaw's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Today on this date, it is October 28th, New York Giants quarterback Y.A. Tittle, this was back in 1962, completed 27 of 39 passes for 505 yards and a record-tying 7 touchdown passes. And the Giants' 49-34 victory over Washington, that game being played then at Yankee Stadium at that time. Now, there have been 17 500-yard passing games in NFL history. I was looking at the list a little bit earlier. Phillip Rivers joined that list a couple weeks ago with a 503-yard game in a loss against Green Bay. Ben Roethlisberger last year, or in 2009, had one of those games. And he last year had close to the league record. He had 522 yards against Indianapolis. Norm Van Brocklin still holds the record with 554 yards in a game played in 1951. A couple other things that happened on this date. 1922, it was the first coast-to-coast radio broadcast of a football game. Also, in 1959, the Buffalo Bills entered the AFL. Some of the notable birthdays on this date. 1965, Mark Carrier. Steve Atwater born on this date in 1966. The safety for the Denver Broncos. Rodney Thomas, who was a running back for the Houston Oilers in 1968. And is there anything else? Terrell Davis, born on this date in 1972, the soon-to-be Hall of Famer. I got a feeling Terrell Davis after what he did. And it's kind of...
Got to get Bo in there.
That's right.
If a TV's in there, Bo's got to be in there.
No doubt about it. Kind of a similar situation. That is this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or if you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 904-620-9225. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, guys, the Giants wait for the return of Jason Pierre-Paul is over. JPP has signed a one-year incentive-laden deal with the Giants. The Giants received a two-week roster exemption for him to start practicing, and that means the team has 2 weeks to activate JPP as he gets back into football shape. JPP did tell the team's website he feels younger after his time away from the game. Bears rookie wide receiver Kevin White has not played at all this season, not even practicing all that often due to a stress fracture in his shin. White told Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune that he's not closing the door on playing this season because that would be like quitting, he said. However, the 7th overall pick in this year's draft admitted that he's a long way off and that a return in 2016 is more realistic. And finally, we talked yesterday, guys, about Bill O'Brien wanting to cut quarterback Ryan Mallett after he missed the team plan going to Miami to face the Dolphins and the beatdown they received there. And Houston GM Rick Smith reportedly vetoed that decision that O'Brien wanted, but yesterday evening seemed like he changed his mind, and Mallett was soon released yesterday evening. The Texans replaced him by signing quarterback T.J. Yates, who is now the backup for Brian Hoyer.
There's chaos in this division, man. What's going on in Houston?
I mean, you know, I don't know Ryan Mallett, but that's a tough one to come back from if you're a quarterback.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that's a tough
Well, after looking like such a baby, you're in a category where you don't want to be. Yeah,
yeah,
after looking like such a baby when you didn't get the starting job and they gave it to Brian Hoyer, and you could tell immediately when they started the season just how tenuous that was, right? Because it didn't take much for them to pull Hoyer in favor of Mallett, and for Mallett to behave the way he did when he didn't get the starting job, and then as a professional to miss a team playing, I can understand exactly where the coaching staff is coming from, and the GM stepping in and word coming out that the coach wanted to cut him, the GM said no. Well, now it feels like you're undercutting your head coach, so what do you do in that situation?
And as far as that team playing, guess what, Tony? There are certain guys who never miss team planes. You know why?
What's that?
Because the plane doesn't take off without them.
Right.
Now, Ryan Mallett ain't one of those guys. Put it this way, Peyton never missed a plane when I was with Indianapolis.
Sure, and I'm sure it would wait on a guy like Peyton Manning if that's what it took to get him on that team plane. And you talk about Peyton and his former team, the Indianapolis Colts, and you're watching, you know, I'm listening to the drill earlier today, and they're going through, because the discussion that's kind of weakly, limply out there right now, that the Jaguars are in the division race, they're only a game back, and technically they are, and technically I'm still willing to say it because the division's so terribly bad
that
the door's still open.
So, I mean, it's, they are, and if you think they're a team that's going to be in games in the fourth quarter, which I do, I expect them to be in most games in the second half, and they figure out a way to win a couple, you've got the Colts at home, sure they're in it. Now, As I've said a couple times in the Ozone, I'm not, my jumping off point in terms of looking at playoff scenarios is when they have a winning streak. So I'm not going to do that yet.
Sure.
But to think that they're not in it, certainly in this locker room and this coaching staff, you've got to look at it like, as Gus said, it's a crazy league. We're only a game out. Obviously, everything's ahead of them. They control their destiny, all those things. But they've got to play better to make any of that be a reality and worth discussing.
Certainly they do. And our fan feedback question today is, who do you think wins the division and with what kind of record? And As I said, I was listening to the drill, and they went through the rest of the Colts' schedule, and somehow they found a 9-7 team in this, John. Okay, and I just want to go over really quickly with you and tell me where you think they're going to be. They're 3-4 right now at Carolina.
Tough.
Okay, so they probably lose that game. That would be 3-5. Home against Denver.
That's tough.
So maybe 3-6.
Sure.
They get their bye week at Atlanta.
Not as tough as the first two, because it doesn't look like Atlanta's going to be a runaway and hide team from the teams. But yeah, that's
sure. So say you give them a win there, though. That's 4-6 now. Home against Tampa, they ought to be able to win that game. That's 5-6 at Pittsburgh. With Ben back, they're not going to win that. At Jacksonville, which I think is a toss-up game, even with how good they've been in the division. Then they're home against Houston, at Miami, and then home against Tennessee. I can't see the Indianapolis Colts winning 9 games this year.
Yeah, well, the reason, I mean, I'm not breaking news here. The reason that you expect them, if you're outside of this and looking in, you expect them to do it because they're probably in a lot of games in the fourth quarter, and Andrew Luck's history is that he figures out a way to win more games than not in the fourth quarter. So, but certainly looking at their schedule, they've got to get a couple, and they better not slip up in anything that you feel like they should get.
Right.
Or else they're in a lot of trouble. And with struggling teams, which all AFC South teams right now are, you usually don't get all the ones you should get. So,
no.
Yeah, it's wide open.
No, and I think, honestly, the AFC South is a race to 7. The team that gets to 7 is going to win the division.
Yeah.
And I think there's an outside shot with how bad the division is this year that 6 may do it. I honestly think 6 may be enough.
Yeah, that, I mean, I laugh because, boy, that would just be something. That'd be something, Tony.
It would be, but I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I just look at that Colts schedule, and I could see a scenario where they only win 3 more games. But if those 3 more games, say 2 of them are in the division, and one of them's Jacksonville.
Wait a minute. Baselli's got us running the table, right? So, I mean,
he's
got to
win in the next 3.
Yeah.
He guaranteed the Jags would be 5-5. Now, he guaranteed the win against Buffalo, too. That one came through. If you want
nice thing about Baselli is he didn't mind throwing it out there on the radio.
No, he doesn't. There was no risk. There was no risk. They were like, well, what are you going to do if they don't get to 5-5? He's like, nothing. It's
right.
The radio. I'm saying what I want to say.
He's on the wall. He can say whatever he wants.
I'm guaranteeing they're going to be 5-5. That's all I'm saying. Is they're just going to be 5-5. John, thanks so much for joining me here today.
And Tony, thank you. I enjoyed it.
I know. What else do you have coming up this week?
Not a lot, frankly. So it's the bye, so we're going to take a little bit of time, but have the Ozone every day, in seriousness. We'll have Jags the Round Table later this week, and I'll be doing a couple of mid-season What We Learned, and today I'm talking a little bit about the draft class, the 2014 draft class, and how they may be the core of this franchise going forward. So we won't leave you hanging during the bye. There'll be Jaguars.com. We'll be talking Jags, talking football.
All right. I think we won't see you till Monday here on the show, right?
Probably not. Not if I see you first.
All right. There he goes. Enjoy the bye week, man.
All right, guy. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to it, too. That's John Osier. Fat Tony here with you. Mike Dempsey rejoins us tomorrow here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday as we continue to roll along. And we'll get into some Jaguar sound as Gus Bradley addressed the media yesterday going into the team's bye, coming off that win against Buffalo, and we'll let you hear what your head coach had to say about where this team is heading into the bye week as we continue along here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Thanks again to John Osher for joining me for the first hour or so of the program today, as well as AFC Defensive Player of the Week, Telvin Smith, for joining us in studio in the last hour as well. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today. I'm Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey decided to take a couple days off here during the bye week. He'll be back with us here on the program tomorrow, and we'll get ready for the bye week for the Jags and start getting set for the New York Jets. Ryan O'Halloran should be with us tomorrow as well here on the program. But right now, let's take a look at what's going on with your Jacksonville Jaguars and get to some of the comments of head coach Gus Bradley. We'll start with just a quick little listen to his opening statement from yesterday.
A lot of things going on. I know at the bye week, just as a coaching staff, going through some things. Also had a team meeting today. Got a chance to kind of go through the game and put it in perspective. Some things we did very well. And very pleased with the outcome, obviously. Some things that we need to work on, though. And I think that's what really was the message to the team. They see areas for really, really good growth. But I was pleased in some of the situations how the things that we've worked on came to fruition, and we utilized some of those traits to help us through some tough times.
They did. I mean, you can tell that some of the stuff they worked on, specifically trying to get after the quarterback, blitzing, that kind of stuff, it paid off for him in this game against Buffalo. Obviously, a lot of room still to grow for this football team. He was followed up with a question on if he's happy with where this team is at right now.
We'll take a look at it by week and, you know, some of the stats and, you know, where we're at, some of the situations, how we're playing. I think there's always room for improvement. You're probably a standard line from a coach. you know, coming off of this game that we just had, probably feel like that, where we're at right now. A lot of good things, a lot of things that we need to improve on, and I think we need to really focus on those areas and attack them like we've done some other things, try to be ahead of the curve on some of the things going coming out of the bye.
We'll see if they can get ahead of the curve, a 2-5 team. I think there's an opportunity in the AFC South if this team can find some kind of way to get hot. I'm not, again, people hear what they want to hear. I'm not saying that I expect this team to start ripping off 4-5 games in a row, but I think there's certainly an opportunity for somebody in the AFC South to take control. In the end, the most likely team is still the Indianapolis Colts, but that doesn't mean that it has to be them, and everybody else is really bunched together right now in the division. Also, Gus Bradley yesterday commenting on one of the changes that they made last week, and I'm not sure that this one paid off for them at all, as Dwayne Grotz at least appeared to have a really bad football game on Sunday. Gus Bradley talked about him.
He did some good things. I think with Grotzy, I mean, obviously a couple of those plays stood out, but overall competed pretty good. I think the challenge for him is to continue to think himself. I think he's a good technician, but I want to challenge him more to be more of a playmaker, you know, when there is opportunities. Not guess and go ball hawking, you know, but when the opportunity presents itself, take advantage of it. I think that's a step that he needs to take.
Yeah, and I wish that we could kill the phrase good things when talking about players. He did some good things. It drives me crazy every time that I hear it. Gus also talked about the guy that Dwayne Grotz got the start ahead of, and that's Devon House.
What I appreciate from him was how he competed. He handled the situation. I thought he was really strong on the sidelines with those guys, and then when he had opportunity, he went in there and competed. So he did a good job. We just had more conversation about it. So I think he has a real good understanding where we're coming from on it. It's really good communication.
Does that mean he's going to start again in a couple weeks, Gus? And I don't think that was the next question that was asked. They went on to talk about Zane Beatles. Want to skip ahead a little bit here. And the plays that I think would have been the center of the entire conversation in Jacksonville had the Jaguars found a way to lose that game would have been the four consecutive plays down on the goal line with Toby Gerhart four times while the team was trying to get in and push that lead to 21 points. Gus was asked about those goal line plays.
You know, we get down there, and I think there's a couple things. I think if you get down there like the fourth down, if you probably looked at analytics, it would probably said kick the field goal, you know, at that point in time. I know where what ours was telling me. For me to sit here and said, hey, it said go for it, that would be inaccurate. It wasn't. It was a coach's choice, and it was a strong, you know, to go for it. I felt strongly for this reason. I felt like we came out of the locker room, we had a long drive, it was 13 plays, we were ahead by quite a few, and it was more of a message to this team, let's finish. Let's finish right now, put this in, and let's find a way. And it didn't work out that way. I think that we had a couple situations, the four carries on the goal line, and then I think it was the second series, we had like three and outs in a row, and we had first and five, and we ran it three times and didn't get it. I don't know how many of those situations our offense has been in the time here where we've been ahead or, you know, and we're going after it that way. We didn't do very well in that. So that's an area that we have to take a look at. We'll learn from it. Those two situations, I think, allow us to really analyze it and grow from it.
So it was his call to go for it on fourth down, and I think – look, when I was watching the game, I would have gone for it on fourth down. That doesn't make me right. You know, it's one of those decisions where I can tell you what I would have done so that I'm not talking out of both ends of my mouth, right? It's not like I'm saying, while I'm sitting here and Dempsey and I are watching the game together, I'm not sitting here yelling, go for it, go for it, go for it, and then afterwards saying, man, I would have kicked the field goal. No, look, I would have gone for it on fourth down too. I don't know that I would have run the play that Gus Bradley had run. As a matter of fact, I know I wouldn't run the play the Jacksonville Jaguars had run because Toby Gerhart, if he had been on the field for me, would have been off the field at the bare minimum after that second down where he missed the hole for the second consecutive play that could have got them into the end zone. I would have given T.J. Yeldon a chance or given my quarterback, who's thrown a lot of touchdown passes this year, an opportunity with Julius Thomas and Robinson and those guys on the field. I wouldn't have made the same exact decision they made, but I would have gone for it in that situation. And again, doesn't make my decision right. It just makes it the decision that I personally would have made. I like the mentality for a team that hasn't found a way to close out a whole lot of feeling like you need to demonstrate that kind of killer instinct. I like that part of it. I wish the team had come through on the killer instinct part of the equation, and instead we all know that they didn't get into the end zone there after four straight runs from Toby, and it allowed Buffalo to stay in that game. Maybe a field goal ends it too, but a touchdown certainly would have at that point in the game. Gus Bradley went on to talk about T.J. Yeldon, who had his best game as a professional on Sunday against Buffalo, and just how impressive he was.
Unbelievable effort, and he continues to grow. He's been very impressive. His toughness, I think we knew he was tough, just how much toughness he had. He was sick, came back. He was not going to miss this game. And did make something out of nothing on occasion. He's been very good. And I keep going back to protection. Man, he's a three down back in the NFL his first year. You know, and he's doing a great job of it. Very pleased with him.
Well, if he's a three down back, why isn't he on the field of the goal line? If he is truly that, we'll see if TJ gets his opportunities in that kind of situation going forward. And I hope that he does, because, quite frankly, Toby Gerhart is just not working with him in that kind of situation and call. Let's skip ahead a little bit here, Tyler, to the big momentum swing against the Buffalo Bills. Of course, they had the 24-point lead in that game. It just kind of got weathered away throughout that game into the second, third, and fourth quarters, and then finally the Bills took a lead there with 5 minutes left in the game. But Gus talked about the big momentum swing in that game against Buffalo.
5 minutes and 20 seconds, and we're down by three. Listen, in the NFL, it's very hard to stop momentum. It's extremely hard. So they come out, and bam, they get a touchdown, and then they throw a pick six, and it feels like momentum is switched, and they're rolling. And how do you stop that? Well, especially with a team that hasn't been in that situation before. And how we came back, and I think the quarterback, just think of Blake, and he just threw a pick six, and the team is, oh, and he puts a lot of it on him, and he went out there and with a clear mind and executed. And it's not just him now. I saw on the sideline the whole offense got together. Mercedes Lewis's leadership was unbelievable on the sideline. You talk about we're a young team with some veteran presence. The words that he gave them was outstanding. Unbelievable how we're going to do this. And to go out there and execute it, then what? Made the extra point, kicked it in the end zone. They had no return. Defense came out. Here they complete a pass. Cyprian hits them, but pursuit, Telvin stops him a yard short. And then we ran a blitz on third and one, and Telvin made a play. Then Derek Marks gets penetration. Clemens goes for the strip. And then Colvin, the indicator, everything that he saw, he played off when we usually press. He got over the top, made a play. I mean, it's unbelievable, that part. So that part right there, great growth. It's outstanding. To stop momentum and switch it in your corner after the number of three and outs. You talk about uncomfortable, keep your spirit, great growth. It's classic illustration right there.
Yeah, and it was Telvin Smith who joined us earlier in the program today, asking him about the mood on the sideline when Blake had thrown that pick six. And he said, for the first time since he's been here in Jacksonville, they all still thought they were going to win that game after a moment like that. And he specifically mentioned the Philadelphia game to open up the season last year, where they're up 17-0 and everything just goes wrong in the second half of that football game, that they didn't have that feeling then, but that he felt like for the first time they had it on Sunday. And I wonder how much of a game changer that could be for this Jaguars team going forward, if the players on the sideline are feeling that kind of difference and felt different about it today or on Sunday than they had before that. Now, of course, the game-winning play, at least the lead-giving play for the Jacksonville Jaguars, wound up being the Allen Hurns diving touchdown catch, and Gus Bradley talked about that yesterday as well.
Yeah, it was. I mean, how he controlled his body, and because we talk about that out in practice. You know, like, you know, Allen Robinson, I've had conversations with him, and we're in a run-through, not full pads, and he'll dive for a ball. It's like, no, you got to learn, you know, when we're not in full pads, you know, be smart, take care of your body. That's not the time to dive full pads. Okay, we get it, but, you know when to and when not to. They're learning all these things, how to practice as a true pro. But, you know, in that situation, to see him put all those things in and, you know, put it together, I think it just comes natural. you know, maybe if you asked Jerry, he'd say, yeah, you know, we worked on that. And I'm sure they have somewhat, but for the most part, give credit to Allen Hurns, man.
Yeah, it was a great play by Allen Hurns to get them into the end zone. And Hurns, after the game, he talked about it a little bit. He also talked about it a little bit yesterday, and he had this to say about that game-winning touchdown catch against the Bills.
You don't really too much work on that, but as far as extension catches, we always tell ourselves just to keep our elbows in. And the main thing is you got to make the catch first, and my main thing was once I had the catch was just try to get the shoulder or elbow down.
And let's get one last comment from Gus Bradley yesterday talking as the team gets ready for the bye week this week, and that is on the status of wide receiver Marquise Lee, who's the guy that we get asked about probably more than any other player as far as the injuries on this team and what the team's plan is with him. So here's Gus talking about Marquise Lee yesterday.
I wouldn't put a time frame on him. I wish I could. But a lot of it's going to depend on how he goes this week and next week and see. We haven't talked too much. I think that we're going to use this week to try to evaluate. And we said we'd go up to the bye week and then kind of make a decision off of that.
All right. Those are the comments of head coach Gus Bradley. As the Jags coming off that win over there in London, their first in London against the Bills, Telvin Smith, who joined us earlier today, has been named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week. We'll take a look at the injury report and go inside that here in just a moment here in studio as we continue along on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious.
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
I'm not sure how long it's supposed to linger. You know, I think he's pretty positive about having the bye week and see what takes place. But, if he is down, you know, then hopefully Shatley can come through and Boenko. I know Luke has got a lot of reps at tackle and some at center. I think that by playing the tackle spot, it's really helped him in space more. And I think he can utilize some of that when he's at guard. So that'll be, you know, to transfer that to guard. But, if Zane's not in, then we'll take a look at those two guys.
So Boenko's getting a lot of work at tackle in practice. That's good to know there from Gus Bradley. Of course, that the comments of head coach Gus Bradley talking about the foot issue for Zane Beatles, the current starting left guard for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Fat Tony here with you. Mike Dempsey rejoins us tomorrow here on the program. But right now we welcome in Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute to talk a little bit about what's going on with the injury report with his football team. How are you today, Doc?
Doing well.
And Zane Beatles not doing so well. What can you tell us about that type of injury?
Well, I tell you, I think a lot of our listeners have suffered from that. I know I have as well. It's a pain at the very bottom of your heel, and it's where your arch attaches. And you know, there's a couple of ways. Sometimes these athletes actually tear the arch away, and I think that's what happened to Ziggy Hood, if you can remember, and he was out for 6 weeks and ultimately released. That's the extreme of the injury, but the more common thing is just tugging on that attachment, and you get some microscopic tears, and you get pain right at the bottom of the heel. And it can be very debilitating. I mean, it's worse in the morning. Once you get warmed up, it's better. Interestingly, football cleats and soccer cleats aren't the best shoes for your feet. And, you know, and they contribute to it. Running shoes, on the other hand, may be the best. So for Zane, they're going to be using a lot of ice, a lot of treatments to try to get him back. And if his isn't too bad, you know, given the bye week, I think he'll probably make it back. But, you know, for our listeners, The key is supporting your arch, and that may be in the form of when it flares up, just using some running shoes until it gets better, making sure that if you got to wear flip-flops, they make them now. They've got a good arch, and those are the ones you want to be in. You just need to support the arch and let that thing heal. And in our case here with Zane and the Jaguars, you know, I think there's a fairly good chance that it's one of those things that he'll be able to get to where he can play through it, but you never know.
Is it a pain tolerance issue, and how much risk is there, if it didn't tear, how much risk is there going out there and playing to furthering that injury?
You know, I think it's one of those things that if you're going to tear it, you just tear it. You know, there's so many people walking around with plantar fasciitis, And I'm not those people that kind of have chronic plantar fasciitis. It's not one of those things like a medial collateral ligament or something that you're worried that they would injure it further. This is more worried that they'd just aggravate it more. And so I think if they can control the discomfort and support the arch and then, you know, you still got to perform your job, which isn't easy. So
sure.
We'll see.
Do you think it's more difficult to play with that kind of injury on a position like offensive line? Like, would it be more difficult to play it there or wide receiver? Where would it affect you the most?
I think it would be a little easier playing it in the trenches because you're not, you know, full on running long distances like our wide receivers are. So I think it's a better position to have, provided the pain isn't too severe.
Speaking of wide receivers, and it's the guy that we get asked about more than anybody else, and what are the Jaguars doing with this guy, and half a dozen people a week tell me, why haven't they just cut him? Why isn't he on IR? And we get asked about Marquise Lee and what's going on with his hamstrings a ton. So what can you tell us about Marquise Lee and just trying to deal with this kind of hamstring injury?
Well, you know, what I'm hearing is this is more of a high hamstring than just in the muscle belly. It may have started out in a muscle belly and then kind of transmitted. And by high hamstring, I mean further up toward the butt. And I treat a lot of runners. And it's a chronic deal. You know, the runner's recovery, we measure more in terms of months than weeks. Again, we saw with Pleslinski and even TJ Yeldon, these guys are special athletes. They come back quicker. But, you know, this is one of those deals. I'm sure that we heard, Gus just saying that, you know, they're going to evaluate him after the break. And it's one of those things. If it's looking more like months and weeks, and, you know, they may end up sitting him down for the rest of the year. But, you know, I feel bad for the player. It's not his fault. But these hamstrings, when they get like this, you can get the best medical care possibly available. I'm sure he's getting that. You can get all the opinions that you want. But unfortunately, it just will get well when it gets well.
Right. And I think part of the frustration for Jags fans is watching Marquise Lee going what he's going through, and then they're watching Dalvin Cook at Florida State, who's dealing with a hamstring issue every week and finding a way to still play, and they're working him on the sideline. Like, when he comes off the field, he is just sitting on a trainer's table, and they are needing that hamstring the entire time. And they all are a little bit different, and you never know how the body's going to react to anything, right?
They absolutely. The location, the size, and they're all a little different. I wish that they got better faster, but this is just one of these injuries. Some of them do, but a lot of them become very chronic and longstanding.
All right, that's Dr. Stephen Lucy, and we don't have to talk about any new injuries next week when you come in, Doc.
That's a good thing.
We'll talk about old injuries some more. Maybe we'll get into what's going on with Julius Thomas and that groin injury when we hear more about what's going on with him throughout this bye week as well. Thanks for joining us, Doc.
All right. Glad to be here.
All right. That's Dr. Stephen Lucy from JOI, Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, talking a little bit about what's going on with the Jaguars and the injury report. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight question of the day asked Jaguars fans, what drives you? Today we're asking simply, what team will win the AFC South and with what kind of record? And let's get some of the responses today on that question. From Irish Jaguar, the Colts will win it with an 8-8 record. From Eric, Colts, and it's not looking good, but maybe 8-8? Hashtag futile. From Paolo, the Jags with 7-9. I was not fishing for that, but appreciate the enthusiasm. From Mike, Colts at 9-7, I can't for the life of me see how the Colts get to 9-7. From Daniel, Colts still win the division with a 9-7 record. The Jags, though, finished second, so back-to-back with the Colts at 9-7. I can't see that happening. From Black Dog Express, looking at the stats, it shows Jags higher-ranked players than others in our division. Jags steal the division. From Love Hyphen, snarky Twitter will win because record will be 8-8 or worse. From Austin, Colts at 7-9, Jags finish 6-10. Those Myers kicks at Indy become even more scrutinized, and that means Dave too. From Desert Duval, 6-10, with the Jags taking it on Facebook at facebook.com/Jaguars today. From Matthew, Colts at 8-8, Jags 7-9, Houston 6-10, Tennessee 4-12. From Kenneth, I'll stick with my original prognostication for the Jags going 8-8 and winning the division. I can dream, can't I? Shocker of the year, the Jags win the freaking Super Bowl. From Timothy. He's feeling good after one win over there in London. From Timothy, Colts, but only by default at 7-9. Dustin says the Colts 8-8 because, well, the Colts. From Joshua, Colts 7-9. And from Damon, everyone's saying the Colts. Why? I'm saying the Jags, period. 10-6, 9-7, 8-8, or 7-9. 10? Jags will have more of a chance than the other three. If our kicker would have just hit one of three kicks, we would not be having this question of the day. We will win this division. Watch and believe. So there are still some believers out here, and getting some funny texts in on the Boston Restaurant and Sports Bar text line about Dr. Lucy's pronunciation of Puzzlesny. He swung and missed twice on Puzzlesny's name, but I don't think he said Bullwinkle.
Tony, have you heard this commotion that was going on in the drill this morning about the pronunciation of AJ Khan/Khan?
I did. I heard about it because apparently Gus said it wrong, correct? Is that what happened? He said Khan, and now everyone was wondering, well, is it Khan or is it Can, or what
AJ
is it?
Khan.
Yeah, AJ Khan. It's not AJ Khan. Your owner's name is Shad Khan, and it was actually AJ Khan, if I'm correct, that finally came in and said, yes, my name is pronounced Khan, to the boys this morning on the drill. So
AJ Khan.
Yeah, he got in on the action as well today, so good for him. Look, I think when you look at the AFC South right now, I talked about it for a few moments with John Osher earlier today. I don't see how the Colts get to 9 wins. I just can't look at their schedule and see them winning 9 games. Not with what feels like a chaotic atmosphere from the top down. They're not getting anything that resembles consistency from their owner right now with all of the issues he's dealing with away from the field with pills and that kind of thing. The butting of heads between the general manager and the owner and the general manager and the head coach is continuing in Indianapolis right now. And I think that's trickling down to what's happening on the field for the Colts. Andrew Luck has been a turnover machine for the Indianapolis Colts this year. They've won 3 games, all of them within the division. Now, if you're going to ask me who I think is going to win the AFC South, I'm still going to say it's probably the Indianapolis Colts in the end, because they've just been so good within the division. Although this year they probably should have lost 2 games already within the division. I mean, honestly, if Tennessee and Jacksonville had just finished games against the Indianapolis Colts, this would be a Colts team that is sitting there at 1-6. Nobody's talking about them winning the AFC South at that point. In fact, you're just waiting for the implosion to happen up there in Indianapolis. But that didn't occur. Tennessee blew the game against Indianapolis, and the Colts took advantage of that. And the Jaguars certainly blew an opportunity when they were there a handful of weeks ago when they were playing Matt Hasselbeck. And that's the reality of the situation. So the Colts are 3-4. But you look at their schedule, I think they're going to be 3-7 after their next 3 games. I really do. I don't think they're going to beat Carolina, Denver, or Atlanta here over the course of their next 3 games in the 4 weeks. And I think the door is still open for the other teams in this division. I am not convinced that any of the other teams are good enough to take advantage of how bad the Colts are this year. I'm not convinced that anybody's good enough to take advantage of it. I certainly don't think it's Houston, who's now cutting backup quarterbacks and not getting much out of that defensive front. And maybe the puzzle of J.J. Watt is being solved a little bit more than it has been for the last handful of years there with the Houston Texans. I certainly don't think it's going to be them. Tennessee, I feel like, is in the same spot in a rebuild that you were last year, Jacksonville. I really do believe that. So I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are the most well-equipped to go get the Colts. But that doesn't mean that I think the Jaguars are going to go get the Colts in the AFC South. If I had to pick a team, I'd say it's the Colts, and they win the division at 7-9. But I honestly feel like it's a race right now to get to 7 wins, and that's going to be enough to beat the other 3 teams in the division. For whoever can get there, however they can, 7 wins, I think, is going to be enough to win the AFC South. And I still honestly believe there's an outside chance that 6 could be enough to win the South. That's how bad I think the four teams in this division are right now. Just bad. Mike Dempsey will rejoin us tomorrow. Thanks again to John Osher, to Telvin Smith for joining me here on the program today. So for John, for Telvin, for myself, for Mike Dempsey, for Joe Fortunato and Tyler Devitt, we'll welcome in the boys of XL Primetime next as we put a wrap here on a Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job!